This is Blue Moon. It's the original fan-made Manchester City podcast. Coming up, we've got news and views from City's week. It's your club, and this is your show.
The final international break of the season is over and the business end is here, which means the time for talking is over. Not ideal for a podcast, I must admit, so maybe we'll leave it another hour or so before we decide that the time for talking is actually over. And before then, we'll get on with another Blue Moon podcast. On today's show, we'll be looking ahead to the pair of big games that Manchester City come back to action with. It starts with Arsenal on Easter Sunday, and then it's Aston Villa at the Etihad on Wednesday evening. Two tricky ties that we'll get into with our guests, Arsenal fan Michael Cashani and Frankie Maguire from All Villa No Filler. Then later in the show, we'll turn to the thorny issue of ticket prices. That was discussed a little on last week's episode, but this week we'll hear from Nick from the Man City Fans Food Bank Support Group and from Dante from the 1894 Group to talk through some more of the issues around the increases. I'm David Mooney. Joining me this week, I've got two City fans, Richard Burns.
Hello, David.
And James Faulkner.
Hello, David.
Hello. Good to have you in, James. First time for you, so nice to have you.
Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Excellent. Well, we'll get into all of that shortly. But first, Richard, I saw you were in conversation with an Arsenal fan that we know earlier this week about how Aguero always scores against them. We got Villa on Wednesday, and I always think it was Darius Vassalu, or like you could count on him for a goal against Villa. So for you, any players that you could depend on for goals against specific opposition, or any players that you feared playing because they always scored against City?
I think the obvious for... what felt like a guaranteed goal against an opponent was Aguero against United, which was always fun. It felt like he always scored against them. And I suppose on the flip side, Rooney against City. Is Rooney still the most goals scored in derbies? I think was always like depressingly inevitable that he was going to score. And I think going back a bit, I think Shearer had a pretty handy record against City as well, didn't he? I think
for
quite a while, I think he was up there with sort of most goals scored by a single player against a single club, which, given that City weren't even all that regularly in the Premier League in Shearer's era, was and it speaks volumes about how many he used to put past us.
Yeah, Shearer's era sounds like a really nice thing to say, so I just wanted to say it. There we are. James, any for you?
Yeah, there's two. There's actually a front line that I think played together. I'd be interested to know how many they scored against us while playing as a partnership, but it's mainly Robbie Keane and Jermaine Defoe, who, despite the fact that they've both retired, I still have sleepless nights about them. I would have liked us to have gone in and bought the pair of them. Like, to be honest with you, they could have sat on the bench. You know, the predominant reason for having signed them was just to stop them scoring against us. That would have been lovely. So, yeah, they're the two that stick in my head. There's other players that I definitely feel that their name on the team sheet I didn't like. Henri, when I was a kid, definitely sticks in my head. I'd say towards the more recent years, Harry Kane, I think he's not scored loads against us, but always seemed up for it against City.
Yeah, exactly that. Well, we'll get into Henri shortly as well, because we'll be talking about Arsenal. But first, as always, this episode of the Blue Moon podcast is sponsored by Green King Sport, where football is more than a game. The season is entering the business end, and Green King Sport venues are showing every single televised City fixture over the 23-24 season. And with more than 900 sports pubs across the UK, it doesn't matter where you're based, you can catch every single minute of the action. Football is best enjoyed with your mates, so if you're not at the ground this month, get a text in the group chat and head over to your local Green King Sports venue to catch the game. Don't forget to download the Green King Sports app to enjoy exclusive competitions and discounts whenever there's a match on. Now, it is time to talk about Arsenal. To help us preview that game on Sunday, we're joined by Arsenal fan Michael Cashani. Hello, Cash.
Hi, David. How's it going?
I'm not too bad, thanks. How are you feeling? Nervous?
Nervous, definitely, but also a lot better than when we had this fixture last year, when, you know, we just went in fully expecting a battering and getting one.
Yeah. I mean, I was going to, like, that's kind of where I wanted to start, because I think I don't know what difference there is with City this season. We'll get onto that shortly with Richard and James. But for you, for Arsenal this season, it does feel like coming to the Etihad this year, it's not, I don't know if grown up is the right phrase for it, but it feels like you're more resilient this year for it.
Definitely. The word that I've been using in discussing it is readier. And like, we're a lot more ready for what it takes to be in a title challenge this year compared to last year. And I still don't think we'll actually win it. I think we've got too many tough away games, and it's just a bridge too far for the size of squad we have. But it's definitely a much stronger, more mature, and as I say, readier team for the big pressure moments, and just have to hope that actually plays out when they come along.
Yeah. James, are you noticing anything different for City this season going into this game? Because like I don't want to be too hard on Kesh here, but it felt for City going into the game last season that Arsenal were almost beaten before a ball was kicked, and it doesn't feel like that this year.
Yeah, for me, last season, sort of when this the running was occurring, we'd clicked, and we've not clicked. I'm not hearing any clicking on that pitch at the moment. I think we're suffering hugely from a lack of creativity in midfield, and I think that that's causing Haaland to be frustrated. I feel like Diaz's form has been pretty poor. Gundogan is a huge miss, and you had all these things coming together last season. Grealish was fantastic. There's a lot we've not got going for us, and I think that we've sort of got reason to be anxious going into this fixture, perhaps more than we ordinarily would.
Yeah, Richard, I know you well enough to know that last year there was no point going into this game. You were thinking, right, well, we got this, it'll be all right. So I know you're not thinking that this year either, but there is a different feel about this fixture this year, isn't there?
Definitely, and I sort of work with a few Arsenal fans who absolutely, like, their mood going into this game reflects what Kesh has just said about definitely feeling more confident this year. I mean, there was one who last year was sort of desperate for the season to end and to sort of, you know, he was sort of resigned to not winning the league, like, going into that game. And at this point is, like, really, and it's not to say that he's not nervous, because these kind of games should make any fan nervous, but, like, he's excited for it and really looking forward to, he described it as sort of Arsenal taking the game to City, and also seems quite keen on a semi-final in the Champions League against City. So it's like from that very small sample size, like I definitely detect like a shift in the mood of both sets of fans. And I just think it's a really tough game for City. I think that, you know, there's a difference in the sort of control that City are exercising over games. It's just not the same as it was last season, when by this point we'd stuck stones in midfield, found the magic formula to controlling games and you know, getting through most games without much of a struggle at all. And now it just doesn't feel like that going into any game. And I've been really, really impressed with how Arsenal have hit form at the right time. And obviously, for it really to be the right time, you have to carry that through to the end of the season. But the way they, you know, sort of suddenly started putting teams to the sword with the fours, five and sixes, it doesn't really matter who you're playing. The perception of that as a rival fan who doesn't want Arsenal to be doing that, it does sort of, you know, you're going into each weekend just with that little bit of extra nervousness about, like, right, well, City don't do it this week, and then Arsenal probably will. And I suppose we have a similar feeling with Liverpool. And it just definitely carries a different level of confidence or lack of at this stage, which is, to be fair, I think quite unfamiliar territory for City in recent years at this stage of the season.
Yeah, Kesh, I saw a graph probably about 4 or 5 weeks ago that suggested Arsenal were the team in the league that were giving up the fewest big chances to the opposition and creating the most big chances from themselves. And I mean, that's just a winning formula, isn't it? That's just how City have won games for years. So, like, what's changed for Arsenal this season?
I think the biggest change would probably be Rice. He's the big signing that came in. He's been sort of the catalyst for the way that we've changed our defensive approach. So, like, we're much more about absolutely strangling the life out of teams, a bit more like the earlier versions of City under Pep, which, I mean, when Arteta was there. So, you know, like, you can see where he got the ideas from. But that thing of just absolutely crushing any hope that your opposition has, and, you know, not giving them a second to breathe. And just, yeah, this thing of not giving up chances as well, because it's on the fairly rare occasions we've been back to the wall, we've tended to see it out as well. And again, this is all caveated by the fact it's March, well, almost April, but we need to show that we can do that in this very final bit of the season. But there is, I think, that what Rice gives you as well, in terms of whether he's playing as the holding mid or a bit further up, he's relentless. He runs and runs and runs. And so having Rice, it's kind of like having, like, a big, physically big version of Kante, because he sniffs out all this danger. He immediately turns it into moving the ball forward for us. And, like, that has been the big change as well. I don't think we were passive last year, but we can definitely play without the ball a lot better than we could last year.
Yeah. How have you been against other teams around the top of the table? Because, I mean, I'll come to this shortly with the others, but City haven't won a game against anybody in the top five yet. I mean, I was going to say top six, but six is United, their rightful home. So, like, against the other big sides, how are you doing?
Largely superb. I mean, so it's been a bit. So start of the season, we started pretty slowly. We had United very early. We had Spurs pretty early, and we were pretty poor in both games. But when we played City at home, the 1-0, and Liverpool away, and then at home again recently, I didn't actually see the cup game, so I didn't, apparently we played very well. But yeah, I mean, Liverpool home recently is. I've not seen a team do that to Liverpool in, well, since they were rubbish, basically. So yeah, we've turned up in the big games, and we've been a bit more about absorbing, not so much absorbing, about, you know, applying that pressure and making sure that we're comfortable without the ball again. And that's where Rice has been playing a bit further up next to Jorginho, who's been, you know, looking after the play in front of the back four. And then that's been, yeah, this approach is much more about security and sensibleness.
Yeah. James, for City, as I say, they're not beating a side in the top six, well, top five this season. Does that make you anxious ahead of these games now at the moment? Because they've had enough of these games to have done something in one of them, and they haven't yet.
I definitely feel anxious about it. I feel like if we were blowing teams away and we weren't sort of... I feel a little bit like we're grateful for every win that we get at the moment. My confidence isn't there with the team. I feel like... we've got a completely different proposition in midfield. You know, Pep likes dribblers like Kovacic and Nunes. And while I think that there's a lot of appetite with City fans and with people who follow City to give players a year to bed in, I don't really think we've had that opportunity this season. I don't really think that the players around the newness have been either fit or performing well enough to allow us to bed players in. And I think that's meant that we have struggled. I mean, you look at our performances even against Chelsea, who are not performing particularly well, but are considered to be a quote-unquote, you know, bigger club. That gives me massive cause for concern, because I kind of hope Guardiola should have the beating of a team after all guns blazing away draw, and he just didn't. So there's lots of bad omens, I think. You know, you look at beating United is not necessarily been anything to write home about. That's kind of bread and butter at the moment. How do I feel like we're going to perform against Real Madrid? Not as well as we did. And how does that focus in against Arsenal? It does make me nervous.
Yeah. Richard, the fact that City are at home for this one, I know Cash is feeling nervous ahead of it as well. But like, I want to see more from City at home. You think of before Christmas when they played the big games there. They had the Liverpool game in the palm of the hand and they drew it. They had the Spurs game in the palm of the hand and they drew it. There's so many of these kind of moments this season where things just haven't gone as well as they should do.
Yeah, I think one thing that I'm wary of is that we are, for all this that we're saying, maybe not as confident as we sometimes would be at this stage in the season, and sort of highlighting these negatives. I do think, okay, I'm sort of wary of being overly negative in a situation where going into the title running, we're a point behind the two teams above us. Like, I don't think, I think there's a risk of painting this as a more dire situation than it actually is. And so
I just liked it when City were the underdogs, mate. That's all.
And I suppose, like, in this situation, you could maybe make a case that maybe underdog is too strong a word, but maybe not the favourites, or not obviously favourites. But I think so. The positive spin I would put on it is we are unbeaten at home in 16 or is it 17 months now? And like, that's a huge thing. And obviously, you know, records like that have to fall. There will be a home defeat sometime in the near future, I would imagine, because there's a reason that a run like that is sort of by exception. But all the same, it should give reason for some confidence. Like, a team has to overcome quite a big psychological barrier walking onto the pitch to think that they can even come to the Etihad and win a game. And then, like, the games that you referenced there where we've got draws, like, obviously they become a pattern, so it is a problem, and I don't want to, like, overly positively spin them. But all of those games, with sort of the quality of the performance, or the, is this a word? The winability of them? Like, City...
I don't know
City,
if that is a word or not.
Winability, we'll have that in the vernacular. That sounds
yeah, it's on the record now. I could give it 2 years of being the OED. I think... like the Tottenham game, how many chances did we miss? Like, you've got Haaland missing open nets. And that isn't actually a really big shift to turning 3 points into nine. And I know that's useless because we didn't. But in terms of reason for confidence going into this game, that isn't an absolutely enormous shift to make, because Haaland is one of the best players in the world at sticking a football in the net, even this year, where he's demonstrably not been as good at it as last year and missed a lot more easy chances than he did last year. You still wouldn't be, you know, you'd still probably back him more often than not 6 yards from goal, wouldn't you? So I think there's reasons for positivity, and I think you can actually spin the Tottenham, Chelsea, Liverpool games as actually a reason for confidence. But I don't know, maybe I'll be eating those words and look stupid after, you know, come sort of 7 p.m. on Sunday. But I think there's a risk of being overly negative about a game that actually, there's as much reason for the opponent to worry as there is for City, I think. Yeah. And that can go either way.
Yeah, just Googled it. Winnability is a word. It's also a piece of software that does password protection and file management for you. So there you go.
There you go. That's, I mean, it was the second one that I was going.
Yeah, it was the second one that I was going for. So it's good to know that it works in two contexts.
Yeah. James, what's a good result for City this weekend?
A good result is a tidy performance. We don't have to be winning 4-0. You know, what a solid 1-0. A Haaland goal, a little tap in from a cutback would be very, very satisfying indeed. I think to neutralise the Arsenal attack would be immeasurably satisfying. In general, you know, I think Pep does have the beating of Arteta. And I'd be satisfied with, yeah, just a neutralisation of Arsenal. I don't think that's what's going to happen, though. I think there'll be goals. I think that there might be the sort of positions where we're chasing the game a little bit. They just seem to be on fire. They've got so many players who are bringing so much quality. And while Kesh was talking earlier, it actually sort of... It sort of made me think about how I think Kesh mentioned that Rice is playing further forward, which is interesting because there was a lot of conversation about that. You know, Rice was sort of wanting to play deeper, and that's perhaps why he went to Arsenal rather than City, because obviously Rodri is the best in the world in his position. It makes me think, you know, number one, how good would it be to have seen Rice play in that further forward position? But his form in general has just been so, so, so good. I mean, I speak to a lot of West Ham fans through work. They talk about how he seems to be visibly making, sort of getting more assists and more goals. Apparently, that's always been a bit of a strength, but it's, you know, it does feel new to see him on set pieces, and he's just such a quality player. And then you look at the other sort of midfielders next to him. Odegaard is a player who I just feel like has got Man City all over him. It's sort of to get a result over players in midfield with that much quality will be very, very satisfying.
Yeah. Kesh, for Arsenal, what's a good result out of this?
I mean, a win is the main one. But no, it's a weird one to think about, because you give the, I mean, often going into these big games and say, like, I'll just take a draw now so it's over. And as much as a draw wouldn't do us badly at all, like, it's what Richard was saying as well. Like, there's an excitement here. Like, I want to see what we can do on, you know, this is about as big as a game gets. You know, I think it'll be a tight game one way or another. I think we've been very good at restricting, especially in the bigger games, restricting the other teams to not many chances. So I think there's going to be not an awful lot in it. I think it'll follow a similar path to that, that City game that we had in, was it October? The 1-0, Martinelli scored the deflection. And so a good result really is, it's leaving there with a convincing performance and at least 1 point, but, you know, ideally all three.
Because
it's much more about restricting City.
This is the thing, though, like, win the game, the title race is in your hands. That's it. Like yeah. It's completely out of Liverpool's hands, completely out of City's hands. After that, you know,
that is
win this
a scary
game,
thought.
That's it. It's yours to take control of.
It's scary with the prospect of being in control, because I just could flash back to last year. I've been really comfortable being a bit underestimated. I mean, I said this like I'm on the team, but like, it's just I've liked sort of being on the outside, just sort of, you know, totting up our wins, being, you know, just, you know, progressing. And then now if we're leading the way, I worry how much that might, you know, that might get to the team. But again, you've got this is the way you have to win a title. You can't just be hanging around until the final day. So
do we want Arsenal to be in control?
Well, this is the interesting thing with the three team dynamic now, because if City win, then it's in Liverpool's hands. It's just like it really kind of assuming Liverpool win this weekend as well, and it goes to Liverpool's hands, and like there's not really a way here where City navigate this weekend with it being in their control without Liverpool dropping points. And I just find it fascinating, just kind of like who wants to be leading the pack at this stage? Because obviously you want to be in control of it all. But I don't know. I've never seen a Guardiola City be breathing down the necks of anybody, let alone two teams. So it'd be interesting to see.
I mean, I'd say last year, it felt like, I remember saying this in, I was on the podcast before, but being ahead of City with, not quite breathing down the neck, because it's about January time. It was the Simpsons thing, is the Skinner non-giving up school guy. Like they're relentless. And it's been, being chased by City, even as a fan, it just messes you up. Like, and I can see how the team crumbled the way they did. Hopefully, again, stronger now. But yeah, as you say, City don't have what they did last year in that respect. So we'll see how that plays out. It might be that the bald man finds himself a formula that then takes you to another level. But I think this is also our best chance going there to get something than we've had in probably since before Guardiola.
Yeah. Richard, for you, when it comes down to the fact that it's a three-team dynamic as well, how are you coping with it this season in terms of kind of checking for other results and hoping that you get favours from elsewhere and that sort of thing? Because when it's been one team, when it was Arsenal last season, when it was Liverpool the season before on just like one team, I was going mad just like constantly praying for results. Now we need it for two teams.
Yeah, I think that, like, previous title races with Liverpool were that you just sort of knew they were going to win every weekend, but you also had a confidence that City were going to do the same. And it was, you know, that sort of false position of whoever played first in the weekend would go top. And, that sort of dictating some of how you felt about your next game, whether you played first or second. I think the three team thing, right? I've sort of spent the season with this idea that Liverpool aren't as good as they were in those title races, but they keep getting the results. I think Arsenal is different because, like, you sort of have the feeling of like, yeah, last year they fell away, and the previous year they fell away from the top four race, but something just feels a little bit different this year. And ultimately, every team that overcomes that hurdle has to overcome it for a first time, don't they? And, you know, there was a point when City hadn't won a league and they hadn't finished in the Champions League the previous season, had been thrown away a really good opportunity, but then won the league. And I don't know, I just have this nagging sense that maybe that's where Arsenal are now, and that they might be about to take that step and win the league. They've obviously got a very good manager, very good squad. And I don't know, like, there's also this thing of, I sort of have in my head, I suppose it's a weird, like, retrospective way to look at it, but City had a point in the season where they won only two games out of seven league games. And I just have this feeling of, like, how many teams win a league having that kind of run within the season? And, I mean, maybe there's loads, but I'd be surprised. I've not looked it up, but I'd be surprised if there's many who've done that.
Yeah, it's not the 90s anymore, is it? Yeah.
No, and I sort of think, like, it's to, I feel like it would be quite poor on Liverpool and Arsenal's parts to have not taken advantage of that. Like, to see a City team that's had that big a weakness in the season and to sort of not use that to open up enough of a gap to then go on and win the league. So I don't know. Like, I'm sort of calm about it. Like, I really, really want to win the league because I'd love us to own that four in a row and be the first team to do it. I obviously very strongly don't want Liverpool to win it. I suppose I'm calmer about the idea of Arsenal winning it because I don't loathe them in the same way.
Oh, it's all right. Kesh can be unbearable, so it's fine.
Yeah, you don't loathe them yet.
I can and will.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know. I'm suppose calmer than I ordinarily would be at this stage in the season. I suppose there's something about the three-team dynamic makes me think, like, all three teams, partly because of the nature of the fixtures, all three teams can't win all of the games. Like, there's going to be drop points, and ultimately you just hope that enough of them fall in your favour. Mm. But I suppose I'm not hugely confident that City will win the league, and I guess I'm I'm making my peace with that now, but if it's still this tight come May, then obviously at that point I'll be a wreck.
Yeah. Kesh, how's the squad shaping up injury-wise? Because, I mean, we'll come to City shortly, but it seems like City are falling apart at the seams right now. So how have you come out of the internationals, do you know?
It seems to be largely okay. So we had a couple pull out before that apparently weren't your classic Ferguson. Actually, he's injured. He's not going abroad. But Saka, they seem to think, will be in good shape. Gabriel as well. Martinelli, I think, is the question mark. And he's big for us as well. Because apart from him and Saka, we don't have anyone who actually just runs at defenders. So that's a worry. But it sounds like he should be able to make the bench at least. But we'll see. And apart from that, that seems to be the only big injury.
Ad-free episodes are available on Patreon. Sign up at patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast.
James, for City, here we go. Walker pulled out the internationals. Stones went off injured. De Bruyne pulled out beforehand. Akanji pulled out of the Swiss squad. No news yet on Grealish, but we can assume he's probably not quite there yet either. Are we at a case yet where you take your boots down on Sunday, you might get a game?
I've played on the Etihad pitch once. It was the morning after, I think it was 2014, we'd won the league. I'd been out celebrating all night. There's a famous video in what was then Montpellier where there was a Demichelis song to Hallelujah by the Happy Mondays, famous video. I wasn't in great nick the next morning to be playing on the pitch. I was in midfield with a lad who played pretty regularly. I reckon... I'm asthmatic. I had my inhaler sucked into my sock. I ran about two, three yards and had to actually leave the pitch. There was no subs to vomit in the dressing room. I came back out onto the pitch and everyone's like, you know, it wasn't nice what people were saying to me. For the second half, I was put into goal. And no goalie gloves. I was wearing 21 on the goalie's kit, which was my favourite number. But I did handle a back pass that I asked for, conceded to that set piece within the box, and was chipped from about, I'll probably say about 25 yards, and I'm 6 foot. So, even if I got the call, mate, to be honest with you, I think my legacy's cemented.
I'm not complaining if you get 20 minutes on Sunday. But
who's going to look at that? In net. To attack the injuries individually, De Bruyne, this is a big one, this, but I think we're in the final chapter of De Bruyne Man City now. Like when he came back and was massive against Newcastle, I was like, right, we're cooking on gas here, lads. Classic De Bruyne's back. He's just going to drag us by the scruff of the neck and everything's going to be fine. And then it's not really that he's dropped off, hasn't he? It feels really, really touch and go with him and the reliance with him because of lack of creativity perhaps around him. The reliance on him is really too much. I don't feel like we can do that anymore. So with De Bruyne, it makes me nervous if we'd have been relying on him regardless. The fact he's injured, he's kind of by the by. I kind of expect him to be injured. I definitely feel more concerned about Walker, who is, in my opinion, best right back in the world. You know, when Vinicius Jr., who is, you know, on that sort of trajectory to being one of the biggest in the world, has so much respect for him. You're sort of looking at it and thinking, you know, Kyle Walker's a huge miss. I trust Rico Lewis, but such different players. It's a difficult comparison to make. Rico Lewis did play, I think, the cup game against Arsenal last season, was it, at home? And was solid. But, you know, Stones concerns me. I think, like, Diaz has been a bit of a figurehead for my internal monologue of hatred this season. I love Diaz. I mean, he was pictured wearing a nice pair of olive black wallabies recently. Minor increase in my affections due to that fashion choice, but in general, his form's just been like, I don't know. I can be a little prone to hyperbole, but he just seems well off it. So I'd want Stones there. Guardiola, I've really not worked out. Akanji probably is one of the most vital players to our system now. Like, if you look at his flexibility and adaptability, Pep obviously trusts him so much. Like, he played all the way across the back line. If he popped up on the left wing, nobody'd be surprised. He's done the John Stones role into midfield. We got him for next to nothing from a Dortmund team who I think are mad to have sold him. he's a huge, huge, huge miss. But, I mean, what does that back four look like? Is it potentially like Lewis, Diaz, Guardiola and Ake? It's not terrible. The midfield.
There's questions to answer though for it, isn't there? That's the thing.
Definitely. I'm not looking at that. I'm thinking, you know, clapping my hands together and saying jobs are good and lads, you know, I'm going down for a pint because everything's going to be sound. It's a tough one. Yeah, the injuries do definitely give me pause for concern.
Yeah, Richard, for City going into this, I mean, I mentioned Grealish as well. No news yet on him. Like when it comes to City controlling games, they've really missed Grealish this season, even when he's been playing, because he's not been on top form yet. So it's like, how crucial is he, do you think, to the remainder of the season?
I think if we were talking like Grealish of this stage last season, he'd be absolutely vital. But I think the answer to the question is he's key as long as we get him in his best form. I think the timing of his injuries have been extremely unfortunate, because if you think of the start of the Copenhagen away game, when, I mean, City were in the first 20 minutes of that game, absolutely spectacular. And I know, you know, maybe not the toughest opponent we'll play all season, but still, City were extremely good. And Grealish was having an absolute whale of a time out on the left. And from memory, it felt like sort of everything was going through him in that game. And then obviously he goes off injured and has then since been injured again. It's really unfortunate. I think like he just offers something. I mean, this is a very obvious thing to say. He offers something so different to Doku, who I think some of the excitement has died down around a little bit. And that's probably a good thing, because I think he had those few games at the start of the season where, you know, after his quite poor debut, he then, like, expectation every time he came on the pitch was through the roof, because he was getting assists and a couple of goals. And now he's, I think his end product is a little bit in question, and, you know, presumably will improve over time. But I think that even more exacerbates the need for what Grealish brings in terms of controlling a game, in terms of being able to slow it down. He's an extremely, extremely intelligent player, and he was absolutely vital to what we did last season. And so, yeah, we do miss him. And so I think the answer is that he is really important, and getting him back is really important, but that's with the massive caveat that he has to be a whole lot better than he's been for the majority of the season when he has played.
Yeah.
Richard, do you feel like Doku, like I sort of look at him and I feel like he's caught between wanting to do what his natural intuition as a footballer, you know, tells him to do, and Guardiola's coaching? It's like, since he's come back from his injury, he's thinking a lot more about what he does. Whereas when he was sort of unleashed at the start of the season, it was really refreshing. Do you think that there's like a little bit of internal hesitance due to Guardiola getting his teeth into it?
I think there's probably something in that, because I think like he's not lost any of the ability to beat a man, has he? And he's no less entertaining. Like he's always a worry for the opponent. But then once he gets in the box, I think his decision making and his end product is what's lacking. And I definitely think like that idea of being caught in two minds and fighting his natural instincts is like would definitely account for that to some degree. I also do think it's really easy to like hark back to the Bournemouth game and what was it, 4 assists and a goal, and to sort of like to like falsely extrapolate that and think he was better than he was at the very start as well. Like I think a lot of it was still that excitement at how tricky he was. But like a lot of his numbers really come from that game.
Yeah, I was going to say, you say a goal and 4 assists. His total for the Premier League this season is 2 goals and 5 assists.
So it's really easy to look and think his end product was better at the start of the season. And that's actually, is probably a bit sort of hoisted by his own petard of having one absolutely outstanding game, some good ones, and then, like falsely raising expectation. And I don't mean that as if to suggest that he's not got the quality. He clearly is an extremely, extremely talented player, but he's probably not the one that we should be pinning hopes on for the end of the season as being the one that's going to pop up with all the sort of game-changing moments. And it would be really nice to have an on-form Grealish on hand to be doing that side of things.
Yeah. Right, well, we'll get some predictions shortly, but first let's get a Villa perspective on Wednesday's game. I've been speaking to Frankie Maguire from All Villa No Filler to find out how he's feeling about their season so far.
The tension is building slightly only because of the fact that I can't remember the last time Aston Villa were in a race for something, you know, so important as potential Champions League qualification this high up in the Premier League. You know, it's it does feel a little bit like, as a fan, I'm feeling the pressure slightly, just looking over the shoulder at Tottenham. And then just that looming cloud of Man United. I know they're 9 points behind us, but there's just something about them that I think Aston Villa fans have a slight PTSD about, that we just don't really like dealing with Manchester United, and so that, you know, slightly worries me as well. But at the same time, you know, looking at Villa, whilst we've not been as good as we were probably in the first half of the season, you know, the beginning of December is where we really peaked. Since then, it's just been a complete glut of injuries and constantly having to chop and change the team, particularly the defence. So it just kind of feels like we're just getting over the line with our wins. It tends to be 3-2, 4-2, 2-1s here and there, rather than, you know, blowing teams away like we were early in the season. So, yeah, it's kind of... we're a bit bitty, and I think if we were playing Man City away a couple of months ago, I'd be feeling a lot more confident. But going into this one, I'm a little bit, I don't know, with our injuries, I'm slightly hesitant to see how this game's going to go.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to ask about that because you mentioned early December being the kind of the peak. That's obviously when we last met you, and, you know, you took us apart at Villa Park, in all honesty. Like, how close to that, if that's the ceiling for this season, how close to that have you been recently?
Well, we haven't. I'd say the Man City performance, that 1-0 was no joke. It's probably features in one of my top performances ever from a Villa team. Just to see, you know, I've watched Pep Guardiola teams all the way back from when he was at Barcelona, and I've very rarely seen a Guardiola team ever get so dominated. So I think that result in itself is just a highlight of my entire Aston Villa supporting life. Really, it's definitely up there. And particularly if it ends up, you know, being a valuable 3 points at least to Champions League qualification this season. But, you know, for us to try and reach those heights again, I mean, one of the issues is that whilst we've had moments probably since January where we've looked really, really good, Fulham away, Luton away in the first half, there seems to be this spell after the second half whistle goes from 45 to 60th minute where statistically we concede a lot of goals. I think we're one of the worst in the league for it. But also it's just the fact that, you know, trying to reach the standards we reached when we beat City and then Arsenal 3 days later. If you look at the City game, we had Ezri Konsa, Diego Carlos, Pau Torres and Luka Dean as our back four. We've not been able to play that since. We're just constantly chopping and changing our defence all the time. And whilst at times we look very solid, it just feels like there just comes a moment where the tiredness sets in. You know, Europe probably is a factor in that. And we can just cave in a little bit. Happening against Luton, happened recently against Spurs, Nottingham Forest as well. And whilst with Luton Forest we got over the line, with Spurs you saw what can happen if we're just not quite at it, where they beat us 4-0.
Yeah, obviously there's Wolves feet to play before this City game. You mentioned injuries as well before. Do you know who's going to be out of this one?
Right, so Jacob Ramsey, he's not been playing for about 2 or 3 weeks now. Diego Carlos, who will be touch and go at centre back. Otherwise, we have had a couple of players come back. John Durand's just come back. But your John McGinn, you know, he's a massive miss for us. He got that red card against Spurs, so he's going to be suspended. Obviously, Mings and Buendia are out for the season. Boubacar Kamara is now out for the season, all with ACL injuries. So our defence at the moment is looking a bit shaky. You know, Matty Cash has just pulled a hamstring playing for Poland. So it could end up being that Ezri Konsa has to play at right back, as he will do for England, it looks like. And then we'll have to go Pau Torres, Clement Longley and perhaps Luka Dean at left back. And the problem is that Longley, you know, he's a good player, but he's a left-sided centre back. We played him on the right against West Ham, and every time West Ham pressed him, quite hard, he struggled to get the ball away. So I think if we end up with that kind of a defence, I sort of think Man City might cause us a few problems just with their press.
Yeah. In terms of the performance, what do you think Emery's going to do for this one? Because you look at how he approached the game at Villa Park, and obviously the context of who is available for Villa and who isn't available is different this time around. Mm-hmm. You look at that game, and like he absolutely nailed it. He just didn't give City any room to play in whatsoever, and Villa were really tight and compact, but at the same time had City under pressure at all times.
Mm. It was a fantastic performance, and that's it. You know, we had our strongest 11 out, which has been a real rarity this season. Which again is testament to just how well Emery's done with this team, to be honest, keeping us in the top four until now. Against West Ham, so obviously McGinn missing is massive. So against West Ham, we went with Youri Tielemans in centre midfield with Douglas Luiz. It's not the most perfectly balanced pairing, considering neither one you would say is an out-and-out CDM. Maybe Timo Robinum, a young player who's not really played that much for us, but spent a season on loan at QPR last year. He might come in as a CDM potentially, but I tend to think he'll go with experience and go with Tielemans and Luiz. And possibly he might change the formation. He did toy with that against Tottenham. And so in the first half we played, it was basically like a 5-3-2. It caved in the second half, but first half it really did keep Spurs very quiet. And I wonder if he might experiment with something, you know, a formation like that again, just against a team of City's quality, because I think the chances are, you know, given the form you're in, and the injuries we have, we just don't really have the same level of the same strength we had in December to take it to City, I think, in the way we probably could have done if most of those players were still there.
Yeah. When it comes to kind of overall performance then at the moment, what are you expecting from Villa? How do you think they'll approach the game?
Yeah, I think we'll be cautious for sure. First half, it won't be anything like what happened at Villa Park, I think. I think we'll be relatively cautious, try and withstand City, you know, as best as we can. If Diego Carlos is fit, I'd imagine he'll start just to deal with the physicality of Haaland. By the same token, you know, we do have some really world-class attacking players at the moment. And what could happen is something that happened, you know, in the 3-2 where you beat us the last day of the season, where what we tended to do is win the ball quite far back, but then just go long to Watkins. And if Watkins is able to find space in behind, I think that could cause City a few problems, which I remember he did a couple of years ago, and it might do this time if we, you know, do choose to go a bit more direct than we usually do. That said, as well, you know, Leon Bailey's in absolutely sensational form, and I think Moussa Diaby as well is really coming into form as well after a sticky patch, and I think Diaby and Bailey, the way those two work together is just mesmerising at times. So, I think I wouldn't be surprised to see Villa go a bit more direct than usual. And then also, if we can, you know, if Bailey finds any bit of space at all, get it into him, and him and Diaby can work some magic, maybe down City's left-hand side. Those are probably the areas I think Villa might be able to cause a few problems. But overall, I'd imagine Villa will be somewhat more cautious than usual in this game.
Yeah, how have you been in transition this season? Because that seems to be where City have struggled a lot this year with teams hitting them in the transitions.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, we scored one of the goals of the season in transition this against Arsenal when we beat them 1-0 back in December. You know, playing it around at the back, you know, after winning it from them and being patient on it. But then the speed at which we got the ball all the way from our defence all the way up into attack, and then eventually got finished off by John McGinn, was just it was an absolutely incredible goal and shows what we're kind of capable of on the transition. But I think it's interesting because most of the time we are pretty ball dominant, so it's more about breaking down sort of low blocks has been a big thing for us this season. But other than that, I mean, I'm trying to think off the top of my head. There was a goal against Fulham as well recently where, again, back to front really quickly. Pau Torres, what he tends to do is he's got such a... He sort of reminds me of a Guardiola-type player. Really, really nice on the ball. Gets it and very quickly can whip a ball into, say, Moussa Diaby, who's the second striker. So bypass the opposition midfield, bypass our own midfield, straight into Diaby, who then can get one quick touch around the corner into Bailey or a Jacob Ramsey who's come deep, say, and then from there we can just hit a team very quickly when their defence, you know, maybe they're outnumbered, they've left a player further forward. So Pau Torres is a massive part of that transition. And I think, you know, if City want to stop that from happening, I'd say stopping Torres from playing the ball about is probably quite key to that.
Yeah. Well, we all know, Frankie, that predictions are a mug's game, which is why I never do them and ask the guests to do them. So it's over to you. How do you think the game's going to go? What's your score prediction for the charity bet?
I'm going to say we score a goal. Scoring goals has not been a problem for us recently, but I just think City, you just look like you're in that machine mode where getting the job done, even when you're not playing at your very, very best, you're still getting results over the line. So I'm going to say 3-1 to City, I think.
If you enjoy the show, please give it a rating and a review wherever you get your podcasts.
That was Frankie Maguire from All Villa No Filler. It's the charity bet time. We've raised a total of £1,040 so far this season. William Hill is giving us three £10 correct score singles on City's games. The winnings are going to the Man City Fans Food Bank Support Group. They're collecting for the Manchester Central Food Bank ahead of City's weekend home games, so they'll be back outside the Etihad ahead of the game with Arsenal. Go and see them with a donation if you can. Let's start with the Arsenal game then. Richard, what are you having for this?
I'm giving a score that I absolutely don't believe in. City 4, Arsenal 2.
Excellent. Well, if it comes in, the bookies don't believe in it either, because if it comes in, it's 55-1. 550 quid, if you're right. James, what are you having?
Arsenal, I'm going horribly, horribly pessimistic and saying 2-2 draw.
2-2 draw is 14-1 and £140 cash. Go on, put us out of our misery, mate.
I'm going with some outright optimism. I'm going to say 1-0 to the Arsenal.
1-0 to the Arsenal is remarkably 12-1. It's the it's the best odds of the it's the most likely odds of the scores that we're predicting. 12-1 and £120 if you're right. We'll quickly move on to Villa. We heard from Frankie there that he's gone for a 3-1 City win. That's 9-1 and £90. Richard, what are you having?
Oh, I am firmly rooted to the idea that City will win 2-1 and cannot be shaken from that belief.
No, you're not, because you said 3-1 initially, but 2-1 is 8-1 and £80 if you're right. James, what are you having?
Tight 3-2.
Tight 3-2. Peek behind the curtain. James also wanted 3-1, but he got there after Richard and Frankie. So 22-1 for 3-2, £220 if he's right. Remember, you've got to be 18 or over to gamble. Prices can change. And for information on responsible gambling, take a look at begambleaware.org. Kesh, thank you very much for being with us today. I would say best of luck for the season and for Sunday, but like, who's kidding anyone here? Like,
I know you wouldn't mean it.
Yeah. Yeah, but thank you anyway.
Thanks for having me.
Right, so it's time to move on. And on last week's show, we talked a little bit about the season ticket price rises. Given how soon the prices were announced before recording, and given that I was on holiday, we didn't have much time to put something together about it. This week, however, I've been speaking to Nick from the Man City Fans Food Bank Support Group and to Dante from the 1894 Group to discuss their reaction to the price rises and what action they're encouraging going forward.
It's been a long week, stressful week in many ways, but I think, you know, in the past, I'm not going to say that my reaction is, you know, my immediate reaction is anger and then disappointment and then it just fades away. What normally happens is, you know, we're right back in the swing of things with football and the football ends up taking over and then we've got another year to be disappointed, as it has been for the past, 4 years on the trot and then another 7 years or so before that. This time, City took the decision to do it right in the middle of a international break. We're going to play Arsenal on Sunday. It's 10 days until anybody can put anything to the club in terms of the presser before the game. I think City were maybe expecting that people's anger, people's disappointment was going to subside, but it's absolutely not. This has just rolled on. And this is so obviously what's happened, just going back to the start, is City have again increased the ticket prices by varying degrees, but again, a cumulative increase of some people's have nearly doubled, if not already doubled in the past 10 odd years, you know, when wages haven't. But it's not just season ticket prices. It's other things around renewals, you know, scrapping the silver season tickets, introducing this flexible gold one, which actually isn't even a season ticket. And if you do decide to go onto it because you can't afford a normal gold ticket, you can never get onto a normal season ticket again, according to the terms and conditions. Things like increasing the from 10 games a season out of 19 to 14 games a season that fans have to attend. You know, there's tons of issues around this, but we have to focus, I guess, on price rises for season ticket holders, even though it knocks on some individual match day memberships or all these things, these extra ways that the club is squeezing money out of us. I'm gutted. I'm really gutted. We've just come back off the best season anyone could have ever imagined. I didn't imagine it. I remember, was it January last year that some of us are thinking the season's over in terms of silverware, and then we've just got the best ever season. We boasted record profits, record revenues, and that could have been a time for the club to sit back and go, right, you know what, we're gonna let fans share the success with us, and we don't need to increase this, like say, £80 million profit. We don't need to do this. But no, they've just pumped it up during the cost of living crisis. Our supporters are struggling more than they ever have done in relative terms to how much football costs. You know, back when we were one of the best teams in the country in the late 60s, 70s, I can't imagine that a whole generation of young Mancunians were priced out of going to Main Road. We keep getting told that, oh, that's just business. That's just the way it is. That's just business. I'm not here for business. I'm a football fan. I'm a supporter of City. It's not a business decision for me, and it won't be after these current owners go, the current people who Manchester City is just an extension on their LinkedIn profile. You know, the people that are making these decisions, we're going to be here after them. We were here before them. I just feel really sorry for all the people who we've already lost, who have already been priced out over the past 10 years or so, and the ones that we're going to see in the next year or in the next couple of years if prices continue to rise like this.
Yeah. And Dante, this year more than any other year, there's been a real unified response from lots of supporter groups. What does that say about this latest round of rises? I mean, as Nick says there as well, like we saw the example earlier this week that Stoke City have frozen their prices for, I think, the 17th season in a row. It's certainly possible, isn't it?
Yeah, it's absolutely possible. I remember you mailing me through 1894 a few years ago saying, do you want to comment on the prices? And we didn't want to comment every year because we're mainly about the atmosphere. Do you know what I mean? Years and years ago, we thought about the takeover. Our prices were quite low in terms of season tickets, etc. My issue is, realistically, and a lot of fans feel the same way. Last 4 years, when a season ticket gets dropped, that isn't replaced like for like with another season ticket. The tickets then go on to the market. The other thing that it really stands out is profits. It's the £80 million profit. So when you have £80 million profit, I don't think there is any justification for your tickets to go up. And most City fans agree with us that it should be a price freeze. We've had some fans saying, well, I've only gone up £2 a game and it's only gone up 3% for me. And that's basically because if everybody had the same rise at the same time, then everybody would kick off at the same time. What they do is one person has a rise of 3%, someone else has a rise of 9%. So overall, it's 6%. So the 9% one goes, this is outrageous, mine's gone up 55 quid. And then you get social media saying, well, mine's only gone up a minimal amount, so I'm okay with it. What about the trophies, the success? And it's, you know what, the treble is the reason why it should be a price freeze, because they'll have budgeted for a top four finish to get to the quarterfinals of the cup competitions, because anything could happen, you know, in any game where you get knocked out. So we're probably £30-40 million better off than they thought we were going to be. Why they can't then pass that back onto the fans, because it's about £1.5 million that they would make from the rises, unless you go deep and you think, well, what is the motivation for that, coupled with they're not putting more season tickets on sale. And it's because a lot of fans will now feel if we were being replaced, we'll feel that the rise is just a justification to try and get some fans to sort of say, I've had enough of this, I'm off. And more of these tickets then can again go on packages or go, you know, keep pay a high ticket price for the match day prices. And that's kind of what they want to do. They're saying, well, out of the top six, you know, we make less money from match day revenue than United, Liverpool, Arsenal, Spurs and Chelsea. And I would say that in this year of all years, where there's an 80% profit, the fact we've won the treble should be a reason that we get a freeze, because they will have surplus money. And next year with the Club World Cup, it's, I think, £50 million for entering it, etc. They're going to be even more of a profit. So we can say probably this time next year, there might be a £100 million profit. Are we seriously going to say, yes, let's all sit back and wait for another 6, 7% rise in the prices? You know, this is the argument that we've got to make now, all the way through the year. Every time there's a cup game, let's challenge it. until all the City fans can see, actually, yeah, we see what the club's doing here. And not just our club, loads of clubs in the Premiership, City will say, Spurs have put their tickets up 10 quid, so we need to do the same. And then because we've done it, Arsenal will put theirs up 10 quid. And you just, it's just a con. It's like six energy companies all doing a price fix where they'll fix it where we'll look to do this, we'll look to do that, and they're all doing the same. They'll justify the rises because the other one is the same. Even an energy company occasionally passes a discount on to their clientele. We're not getting that in football. The club's tactic of, you know, you have a rise of £15, you have a rise of £60, is designed to divide and conquer the fan base. And if you step back and say, well, actually, if they were to just do the same uniform rise across the board, 6.5% for everybody, the reason they don't do that is because they know that they have a leg to stand on. And that's the case that we've all got to make now over the next few months.
Yeah. And Nick, I mean, the other side of this is we asked City to comment on the prices. We asked City to justify the prices for the podcast. Instead, they told us that they won't be commenting. There is a real lack of communication from the club here now. What does that show?
I want to be as sympathetic as possible here, but that's because I've been born and bred and brought up in this club, in supporting this club, loving this club, going to Main Road, coming to the Etihad. But I can't. They're a £1 billion entity with some of the best, most professional people in their respective positions in the world. In terms of, we, you know, City fans have in some cases when we've been defending the club over the past however many years, we keep saying we're an incredibly well-run company, well-run business, run better than other comparable football clubs in the league. Are you telling me that anything that they do is merely a gaffe or a cock-up or a mistake? No, these things are done intentionally. They're ignoring this. They either don't care, want to ignore it, or don't even want to give it any attention in case it gets larger than what they're seeing it is now, or all of those things. I think it's all of those things. If you've got journalists getting in touch with the club about a business decision, a very serious business decision they've made, something that I know you yourself have pulled up of the past few years on the trot, but there's been fan reaction to it every single year. If they're ignoring journalists, on whether they're small or major, we're talking national outlets, some of these, what are we meant to think they think of us? You know, it's quite depressing, to be honest. It's really depressing. We love this club. All of us love it. Everyone who's speaking here, everyone who you'll have on your podcast, and everyone will be whinging about this. And we are whinging, but we're also standing up for ourselves because nobody else will. Nobody else stands up for us. Football fans in general across the country, barely anyone stands up for us. And, you know, you're saying there, it's happened to Spurs, Arsenal. We've just heard Brentford fans have seen a 10% ticket rise. The Chelsea fans are having issues at the moment. Villa. Fulham fans have had some crazy ones. We've had the £30 price cap on away tickets across the league for the past 5-6 seasons. They understand that fans have value when they're in a stadium. They bring value to the product, if we're going to talk about it like that. It's the same in the home ends. Why can we not do that? You mentioned Stoke, 17 years. Yes, Stoke are in the Championship at the moment. Stoke were doing fairly well in the Premier League during a lot of that 17 years. These are all decisions by the richest people on earth. The club deciding not to comment on it is, it should, do you know what it is? I'm actually glad in a certain sense because I hope it can make so many City fans routinely defend the club, whether online or in person and stuff like that. And I'll defend the club in many ways, you know, for on the pitch stuff and the management and the players and all this. But how can I defend them for this when they're not even looking out for us? I'm almost glad they've done this because I hope it will make people see, actually, no, this is what they think of you. They think you will sit down and take it. Or really, they hope we'll just quietly suffer. They only want what is best for their bottom line, for increasing revenues, increasing profits. And that's not all to invest in the best players, the best management. We've already got the best manager. We've already got most of the best players. We've completed football. We completed football last season. We are the most valuable product in world football. By we, I mean the Premier League, English football. We are getting more money in broadcasting rights than ever before. All of these clubs, that's Tottenham, Chelsea, United, Liverpool, whatever, all of these clubs are getting more money than ever before. Match day revenue has never mattered less. It's never mattered less for City. It's never mattered less for anyone in the Premier League right now. If City have not said anything after a week, they're not going to say much more. I hope City fans keep engaging with groups like 1894. Go look out for 1894 on social media. Join them up. Sign up to their newsletter. Look at City Matters. City Matters have got some fantastic reps working for them. But ultimately, they rely on how the club operates. The, you know, until last week, until earlier this week, the City Matters minutes from meetings hadn't been uploaded since December. You know, that's because the club's in control of that. Our fans at some of the City Matters are doing the best possible. 894 are doing the best possible. We're shouting up from the fans' food bank side. And Kevin Parker from the official supporters club has spoken in favour of a price ticket for a season ticket freeze. But the, if the club aren't listening to every single person, practically, who every single group who is representing City fans, then I'm not sure what more we can expect from the club. I think we've all got to look at ourselves and what can we do to make a change here.
Yeah. And Dante, just on that, and just to finish, fans are kind of stuck between a bit of a rock and a hard place right now because no new season tickets are being released. So if people do give up the season ticket, then they're not going to be getting them back anytime soon. They're not going to be able to sign up again for new season tickets later down the line. If they keep it, they have to pay more money to keep it. So, I mean, in terms of what fans can do, what are you encouraging fans to do?
Well, the first thing we need to do is just raise awareness and make sure everybody understands what's happening here. We've got very rich owners, which has done a good job overall. We've had some talks about support. There is a need for that because I think there's got to be another group which keeps the club in line. And certainly what we're doing in the meantime is doing as much publicly. If we feel they're not going to listen privately, then we do as much publicly. People should, if they, you know, can hold on to the season ticket holders. And if they can't go to the game, don't use the club's ticket exchange. You know, just give it to friends and family. And let me make another distinction. It's not about, oh God, a new fan or someone from abroad can't come to City. I'll tell you straight away that we get donations from all over the world. We've got to do a Madrid display on the way, and that's a guy in Japan who's doing it for us, who's a City fan. And when they buy into Manchester City, they buy into the club that is, you know, has, you know, something about it because of Manchester. If they were coming over for a game, even occasionally, they would want to hear all the songs. They would want to have a real feel of, God, I'm in a real Manchester City game. They wouldn't want to come and just think, what the hell's all that about? Complete silence. You know, so we need the season ticket holders to be there to provide an authentic, you know, demonstration of what it is like to be a Blue. Fortunately, we don't have many City fans at the top of the club. They don't make an emotional decision. They are ruthless. You know, it's all about the money situation. What can we do? You could spend less at the bar. You know, you hold on to your ticket. I think if they froze prices, people would spend, they'd get the money back anyway because people would spend more on, you know, the facilities. It's just a little bit of a short-sighted decision. I'm not surprised there's nothing coming back from the media team because the way that City's run is, it's very, very strong characters at the top. Club, Caldoun, Simon Pearce, Roel de Vries, and obviously Ferran Soriano. So if the press people are not getting back to people, it's because Soriano, Simon Pearce, Caldoun, Ferran Soriano have said, we're not commenting, we don't want anything to come out whatsoever. What that means is it just allows us as fans to continue to make the case for a price freeze. I do feel like there should be a price freeze regardless of for the foreseeable future, next few years. Like Nick said, we've had £30 away tickets. There's a case to say that is allowing fans to keep travelling. That allows for the atmosphere, that allows for the spectacle, which allows for big TV deals for the Premiership around the world. Everybody loves English football. Everyone loves the spectacle. There's now a case to say, let's just freeze the prices full stop across the board, and then everyone knows where they are. And I think that's the fairest thing for supporters.
You see stats pop up all the time about clubs and players, and you want to know that exact thing about City. There's an answer. Statcity.co.uk. Want to find out all of the players who played alongside club legends like David Silva, Sergio Aguero or Vincent Kompany? Or maybe you'd like to know which team found it hardest to score past Joe Hart. You can find out City's record in every competition, at every stadium, and under every manager. Just go to statcity.co.uk and browse away. That's statcity.co.uk.
Get involved with the debate on Twitter at Blue Moon Podcast.
That was Nick and Dante talking to me about ticket prices. Richard, now that you've had time to digest everything, what do you make of what's happened in the past kind of week, 10 days?
Well, first of all, just off the back of that, just to say, I thought Nick and Dante were absolutely brilliant. And I mean, to be honest, we could leave it there and there'd probably be enough said. But also, I'm always happy to, well, not happy to have to do it, but I'm always willing to get on my soapbox about this issue every year anyway. I think it's terrible what City are doing. I think it's really, really sad. And I mean that in a, you know, a very literal sense. Like it saddens me to know that this is the approach they're taking to their supporters, to people who have largely been going for many, many, many years and putting the money into the club for a long, long time. And it's more than money, which is the whole point. It's a whole emotional investment that you put into this. And unfortunately, it's City who then boil it down to you know, the financial investment and how do you turn that emotion into the absolute maximum that you can squeeze out of people. And I just think, like, I was thinking about this morning and I was sort of thinking, like, there's almost nothing new to say about it. The only new thing that you can do is take different action about how you deal with it. Do you stop going? But then the club have won, because if you stop going, your seat will be filled by somebody else. So you actually don't matter to them. You're effectively a number on a spreadsheet. And
at the same time, if you give up your season ticket, then you ain't getting it back, because there's no new ones being released and there's a waiting list.
Exactly. Yeah. And so I think, like, something that quite a sad conclusion that I think I've come to is that we quite often frame this, and I think rightly frame it, as the idea that City as a club, and if we sort of pretend for a moment that football clubs are still some kind of representation of the local community, which of course they're not, but it's a nice ideal. Like City should in some way be trying to help supporters, particularly at a time when City are a club, for reasons that Nick and Dante have already said, a club that don't need City's ticket money. Like, really, it doesn't shift the dial a whole lot in any of the measures or things that they need money for. Like, the reason that they can't help supporters now is because there isn't a shared interest. There's a conflict of interest between City and the supporters, because City's interest is maximizing revenue, maximizing money. You can be cynical about it and I'd say conspiratorial, but I don't really think it's conspiracy. You can look at it as, actually, maybe it helps us to shift these fans out, because then we bring more in, we bring a different element to what supporters bring to the stadium. Maybe if it's somebody who hasn't been coming for a long time, maybe they spend more in the club shop. Maybe, you know, I don't pay for anything in the stadium on a match day. I get my chippy before the game, I take in a bottle of water. Like, maybe if you bring in somebody else, they'll be more into going, paying £5 for the apple pie and custard or whatever it is. Like, there's so many ways that it benefits City to squeeze me out. And so that conflict of interest means that the only shared interest that you then have, because it's not in my interest to pay more for the same products year on year, like, the only shared interest that I then have with the club is that 90 minutes on the pitch, like every time that they play. And we both have the interest that we want City to win. But then City's, as a club, City's interest in winning then is anti my interest, because the more they win, what we are seeing is the more they win, the more they use that to justify price increases. And so actually, we come to a point where it's almost anti my interest for the club that I have had a season ticket at since I was 10. And to elaborate that point, I'm about to turn 36 this year. Like, it becomes anti my interest for them to be good, because there is a very, very feasible point where I am squeezed out. I'm not, you know, I'm not going to plead poverty, but I'm not rich. Like, there is a point where the value of what I can pay for a ticket against the other balance, like my family time, like all of those things become a factor in, do I keep doing this? Do I keep going? And eventually, if the increases keep going up so much above the rate that my wages go up, then there comes a point where I just can't keep justifying going. And so what is the shared interest that I now have with the club? And essentially, there isn't one, because the club don't value my emotional investment. They only value what I can offer from a financial perspective. And at some point, someone comes along who can offer more. And I just think that's absolutely, I think it's absolutely tragic and a terrible, terrible way for it to be going. But it's just how I see it now. Me and the club are essentially in conflict as to what our interests are.
Yeah. James, when you look at the reaction to this week, the fact that, you know, the Food Bank Group, 1894, City Matters, the OSC, all of them have spoken out against this. And this is like, there's never been that sort of unified reaction before. This has been a building process over the last kind of 10, 12 years or so where it's got to this point. Do you ever see it stopping?
Firstly, a huge credit, I think, to everybody who's sharing the views on this. And I think it's great that fan groups are taking the opportunity to give us, as a broader fan community, who in this situation don't really have a lot of agency, and the club sort of rely on that, to give us a voice on the issue. And I think that's a really valuable thing to be vocal about, because this is an ongoing year-on-year issue now. Like, the club try and facilitate their business in a way that they want to be perceived as benign, in that year on year it's a very small increase. But if you look at it over a period of the last 10 years, there's a clear strategy at play to try and get these small increases past fans. And it adds up, you know, it gives the impression that this price dynamic could continue indefinitely. And that should be concerning for all fans, not just of City, but of clubs in general. You know, this is a club that has been built on community values, and that is a big sort of part of the appeal of the club for me. Growing up, this club has been probably the one linear thing that has been part of my life that I've loved right the way from being born to adulthood. It's something which I don't feel like anything else in my life the way I do about City. And there's lots of people out there who feel exactly the same and are having to make very hard decisions about something that they love like nothing else, because of the way that the club are doing business. And I don't even think that, particularly on tickets, I don't even really think that, from the negative PR that the club are getting, I don't even think it's worthwhile to them. You know, I've seen figures going round about how much they're making from the increases, and it makes me sort of laugh. Surely they should be focusing on this issue and thinking, right, you know, we have got lots of good PR. We've improved this area of Manchester. Look what we've done on the pitch. We've built a fantastic club, and tick, 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 they've done all of those things. But this is a club from a very economically challenged city in areas. There's lots of working people, and it is at odds, I think, with the millionaires making the decisions. And I think that they need to reconcile a little bit of what they want to do with what the fans need and want. And maybe, you know, someone needs to go in there and say, guys, there's a great opportunity for us to have a good bit of PR with this, freeze it for a season, and you can dine out on that for a couple of seasons. But there doesn't seem to be the appetite to do that, and I do think that's sad.
Yeah, when you think as well of kind of like the lack of engagement over it, I mean, I mentioned to Nick and Dante there, we asked City for comment. They declined to comment, and they just won't answer any of the questions we put to them. We expect Guardiola will probably be asked about it on Friday's press conference. He's been asked about it before, and he said it's a question for the CEO. We've got no way of asking that question to the CEO. So what do you make of City's lack of engagement over it all, James?
The club clearly don't want to come to the table to discuss this issue, because essentially it's very difficult, I think, to justify. You're not going to go to a battle conversationally that you're fairly confident you're going to lose. And so for them, and I think, you know, shrewdly, if I was on that side of the debate, which I'm clearly not, I would probably not come to the table. I think it definitely shows a little bit of disrespect to the people who are in the stands making the noise for the players, to not at least give the time of the day to discuss something which is clearly having a huge impact on fans' perception of the club.
Yeah. And Richard, for the other side of this, we do occasionally get, we should reflect that some fans, when they see the rises, are quite happy to say, well, you know, it's in line with inflation. City aren't a charity. They make, they're a business to make profits. The quality of football's excellent. So we, you know, what price is good value, that sort of thing. FFP, PSR means that the club needs to get every penny it can. What do you make of those arguments?
Well, I suppose I'll say the obvious point, that like it's almost, it feels cliche to say, because it's the first port of call with any of this stuff, and is what City are trading on anyway. You can't turn off your support, can you? You can't turn off that you're a fan, and you can't take in comparison City's price increases against other clubs' price increases or or otherwise, and choose to go and watch another one in the same way that you can with other businesses who can say sort of, okay, here's our, here's our increases. We've got, so, you know, get in line with inflation, blah, blah, blah. But actually, if that's one TV provider or one utilities provider, you can shop around and see, well, okay, they're all going up, but like, can I shift? Can I go and switch? And then they'll come in, you know, like they'll undercut each other. Like, you don't have that option with football. And so the idea that, like, the business element of the need to put it up, like, it almost, if you accept that as true, it still traps you as a fan, because then you're still trapped in a decision of, okay, well, do I just accept that and pay it, which is detrimental to my pocket, or do I not, which is detrimental to me spending my time how I enjoy spending my time in my life with people that I enjoy spending my time with. And it all, like, I guess basically what I'm trying to say in maybe a slightly roundabout way is you don't have to accept that City are just a normal business, because they don't present themselves as that outwardly. Football trades, it's like on the emotion that it generates, and it tells you that you should be part of a community. And like, essentially, like, one of the things that I think is really difficult for a football club is whether they tell you or not, or whether they monetize it or not, you are part of that community as soon as you become a football fan. When you're in the stadium, you are part of the community that everybody there is part of, and you share like an emotional attachment with those people that all relates to the team that you were watching, and all relates to this club that you spend so much of your time thinking about. And like, there's so much of it that actually the club, they can't monetize that sense of community in any real meaningful way. For example, we're having this conversation now very passionately, and, you know, a few thousand people will listen to it, and that isn't monetizable for the club, but it will generate emotion in everybody that is attached to the club. And so, like, it just isn't a normal business where everything that a business does usually does have a profit incentive or is monetizable. And so it's just like constantly football clubs seeking for a way to trade on your sense of community and your emotional attachment to something, that they actually, whatever they do, they don't change your emotional attachment. They can positively or negatively influence it, but you are, for the rest of your life, you have that attachment to this club, regardless of what they do. And so, like, all of that stops it being a normal business. And I don't care about the rules that they have in the Premier League. The clubs vote for them anyway. So if the clubs don't want to have to charge more money, then don't vote the rules in that require you to maximize how much money you take out of fans' pockets anyway. Like, it's not a normal business, and it doesn't sell itself as being a normal business. And you just, as I'll say what I said last year on this conversation, you don't have to go into bat for them, because every time you are treated like nothing more than a consumer, then that gives you the right to view the club as nothing more than, realize how much I was about to contradict myself. It does give you the
nothing
right
more than
to
a business, but yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah,
it gives you the right to view the club as nothing more than a business, but that isn't what it's meant to be, and that isn't how they want to sell themselves. But it's just what they turn that relationship into, and it becomes just merely transactional, with like the residual benefits of we get to enjoy like quite good football as a result. But that shouldn't be the driving factor for making more money. Like, the more successful you get, the less the club actually needs that extra little bit of money. Like James said, the amount extra that they make out of it is entirely laughable. It doesn't justify the means here, but it
maybe does when you realize that actually they might make an extra, what, £1 million this year, but that's on top of the extra million they made last year and the year before and the year before.
Well,
that
this is the thing, isn't it? If you sat me down with somebody in the accounting team, or the finance director, all these people who influence this decision, like, they would win the argument, wouldn't they? Because they'd be able to point to me, well, actually, this graph goes up here and this graph goes up here, and this is how much will be in the bank. And I'm arguing from an emotional point of view that I don't think that should be the way that they view it, but they do. And people will keep going, and they'll keep selling out the games. And so actually they have an argument that at least from their point of view, they would always win. And I wouldn't be able to argue against what they're saying as to how financially valuable that is to them. My point, as I think a lot of City fans' point is, and increasingly so as they keep doing this, the point is that we don't think that should be the motive. I think that a football club should be more than that. But I couldn't win the argument with somebody in the with the director, because I come back to my conflict of interest point. We wouldn't be arguing from the same frame of reference.
I think you could, Richard. Right? I think you're making a really solid point here. Right? And I think, right, this is going to catch up with City. If you sat down, right, with somebody in City's accounts and went through all this sort of stuff, you would actually be able to say, "Look, lads, I've got like evidence here that you want more from us. You want more from fans. You feel like some games the manager's coming out, he's putting pressure on us. There's clearly attempts within the stadium to improve the atmosphere, right? This is going to catch up with the club, because it's the fans who, maybe the fans that they don't on paper want, you know, they're the fans who are going to get replaced. And I'm not too sure that the people coming in understand the culture of the club and the songs and want to give it the atmosphere. It's like the Charity Shield's the best example of that. I think that is great evidence to put to City and say, "Lads, I understand the business you want to do. Fine, no problem at all. But there is a counterpoint, and that counterpoint comes with, in that stadium, when we're 2-0 down against Crystal Palace and everyone's sat there saying, 'Well, this isn't really worth what I'm paying. I thought I was going to come and see Haaland score a hat-trick. This isn't very good.' Rather than getting up and, you know, screaming like I would do and getting behind the team and try to give the players my energy, they're going to damage that. That will catch up with the club if they carry on moving like this."
It's a fair point.
Yeah,
it's a very fair point.
And James, just to finish as well, I mentioned it to Dante and Nick. I have checked it. It is right. Stoke City were highlighted this week for freezing season tickets for the 17th year in a row. Do you ever see a time when City don't raise the prices? I mean, maybe the difference is there's no major waiting list at Stoke, and maybe the percentage of the stadium taken up at Stoke by season tickets isn't as high as it is at City, because they do have a lot of season ticket holders at City. But do you ever see a situation where you could be looking at City in a similar sort of vein?
While Guardiola's here and while we're still winning trophies, no. When Guardiola inevitably departs and we have a period of, I think, instability, I think that there will be the club will struggle for that element of box office for a period. You might see it then. Equally, I think that if, you know, the stuff with the charges occurs and we get punished, we're found guilty, you know, if we get relegated, hypothetically, then the club are going to do a U-turn, I reckon, and they'll be begging for people to come and watch City in the Championship for 15 quid. And they're the only two things that I can perceive. Just to reiterate, as long as Guardiola's here, as long as we're signing good talent, winning trophies, this dynamic, I feel, will continue exponentially.
Yeah, well, as ever, keep your thoughts coming in on the season ticket price rises at Blue Moon Podcast on Twitter. You can email us as well through the website, bluemoonpodcast.com. We do want to hear from you. That's it for this week's Blue Moon Podcast. Thank you very much for listening, and thanks to my guests, Richard Burns.
Thank you very much, David.
And James Faulkner.
Thank you very much, David.
There is a clip of this week's Patreon show on the way very shortly. I'll be back next week after the games with Arsenal and Villa. See you then.
That was the Blue Moon Podcast. Please give the show a rating and a review where you can. And don't forget, you can listen without the ads by signing up to our Patreon. You'll also get an extra episode each Monday. Here's a clip of this week's.
Can't remember exactly how many goals Aguero scored, but certainly I think this first one was like Demichelis headed it on in a corner, and then he just sort of volleyed it into the top corner. Yeah. I always loved that goal.
I think games that finished 6-3, I think they piss me off a little bit, because I don't think 6-3 has any place being a football school.
What is your reason for that, actually, before I...
Well, like 6-1, 6-2, I can kind of get. 5-1, 5-2, I can kind of get. Even 5-3, I can kind of get. But 6-3, it just feels a bit wrong. It feels like you've battered somebody, but you haven't quite battered them enough.
Are you thinking of the derby last season?
Yeah, that has no business being a 6-3.
Yeah, because that performance, absolutely no way it should have ended that way. Because when it was like 6-1, it was like, this is just mega, like... and then it just completely got, not ruined, but it was like a real dampener, wasn't it? And just so unrepresentative of the game. The Arsenal game, though, I'm fairly sure it wasn't quite as bad as that. I mean, I'm fairly sure they probably deserved their goals more than United did.
Yeah, I think the Arsenal game, I think it was very much a you score, we score sort of thing, not like, oh, too late consolation goals like United were.
You can listen to more of that at patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast. And join us again next time for another episode.